Welcome to the podcast. We have quite the show here for you today as we get you into the Memorial Day weekend. John Walker Lind, the American Taliban, he was released. We go through the New York Times case that he should have been released. In fact, he wasn't that bad of a guy at all. Shockingly, the Times brought that. And we talked to Jason Buttrell, who was there, who actually was in Afghanistan as the interrogation of John Walker Lind was going on. He saw him in person. He was in the room. And we get his telling of that story as well.
In hour two, we talk about some of the Democrat candidates. Beto and his gun ban that he wants to bring about. Or does he? We talked about the Biden hype a little bit. And we get into Buttigieg and his take on Donald Trump and Trump's lack of military service.
And we talk about Chernobyl. If you don't know this HBO series, it's worth your time.
Was it 17 million who died in that?
No, it was about
18 million.
56,
no, that was Three Mile Island.
56 million?
No,
oh my god,
56 people.
Three Mile Island is where all the
oh,
they
that's
all died.
Right.
And
yeah,
they were
yeah,
all
yeah,
workers who were actually in, like at, standing next to the corp. But the series on HBO is amazing, and there's a really yeah, great lesson. If you have a voter that you know is thinking about Bernie Sanders, let him watch Chernobyl a little bit, see how socialism really works out. We go into that, and Stephen Colbert. Stephen Colbert and ESPN were competing evidence. Does going all Trump right, all the time work? The story is pretty varied, honestly, around
yes,
the media,
is,
and we go into that as well. It's all on today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck Program.
Pat and Stu for Glenn, and Jeffy joins us as well. Finally happened in the UK. Theresa May resigned.
Oh, no.
And frankly, I don't understand this parliamentary
system. I'm so glad you said that.
I don't get how it works.
I don't get it.
How do you not serve out your terms? And 95% of the prime ministers in Britain don't serve out their term.
No.
It's like, oh, okay, we pissed us off this week, and it's windy. He's got to go. How does that happen?
Right, because Brexit was also responsible for Cameron leaving, wasn't it?
Yes. When the vote happened,
Cameron
said, okay, I'm resigning.
Right. Like, wait, what? I can't. What?
And then Theresa has screwed it up so much that she has to go now.
And I don't even know. I don't know that she had a win. I don't know that there was any way to win this because, you know, she has to get something passed. So as much as it to me, it seems like, look, the people voted on it. You have a system where people can vote on these things.
Yeah.
They voted for Brexit. Do it. You know, it's a lot more complicated than that. And there's not really a simple solution there. We've talked to Daniel Hannan about this, who's really the only person go to when it comes to Brexit.
He's the only person that understands it, I think.
Yeah. And he was really the guy who yeah, basically pushed for this. A lot of other people have had press on this over the years. But Daniel Hannan was the guy who really talked about this. I mean, the first time he was on with us, probably 2010 or 2011, he talked about how it was his priority. He worked in the, he was in the European Union, he was in the government, and he wanted to dissolve it.
Right.
He wanted to get Britain out of it.
Right.
He actually succeeded, and then here we are years and years later, they're still fighting about it.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things where I just don't understand. Like, it seems like every time something that's a priority to a prime minister doesn't go their way, they're like, all right, I'm out. I tried for like a year, and you guys don't want to do the thing I want you to do, so see ya.
These coalition governments are really confusing, because if you don't have enough members of your party voted into parliament, you can't govern, and you realize that,
right.
And then you strike some deal with some other party, and
yeah,
they take over.
Then, like, the 14 parties all get together. And
that's another thing. I don't understand the parties. The Tory party. I knew what the Tories were in the Revolutionary War.
Right.
I don't know what they are today.
Yeah, she's the leader of the Tory party now.
Right.
Right. And so, her resignation is effective June 7th, but she's not really leaving until maybe they find some replacement
July, I think,
in July.
And I just can't understand.
I can't either. And are you going to vote on somebody, or you just put them in there? I think they vote. Right?
I think they have
another election, which they can do elections at any time. That must cost them a fortune.
Yeah, because they're just like, I love when they're always like, you always get this story, like, Theresa May decided she was going to call for a new election. You're like, wait, what? Like, wait, they don't schedule these things in advance?
It's so weird.
They're like, you know what, 2 weeks, we're doing it. Like, it seems like what happens is whenever the prime minister thinks they've consolidated power or are doing well in the polls, they just call for another election to try to get more power, which is a bizarre way of running
things.
That's
why we left that stupid country in the first place.
And we're the minority still. I mean, the parliamentary democracy has spread around the world, and a lot of times we talk about that essentially being how democracy is spread. I mean, like, a lot of countries have this type of system. Uh-huh. It's less like our type of system, which has proven to be vastly superior. Let's be honest about it.
Let's do.
I mean, it's just better. I mean, again, there are a lot of problems here. I'm not going to sit here and say that there's no problems in this country. But the idea that, like, can you imagine if, like, Donald Trump had a good day and then he would just call for a new election and get, like, 80 senators... And then he's like, you know what? I want to pass the wall. And he couldn't get enough of his bill. He's like, all right, I'm stepping down. And you're like, wait, we elected you for, we signed you to a 4-year contract.
Yes.
You know? And it was like, it would be as if, it's like everyone in Great Britain and all these other countries are like Le'Veon Bell. Like they get offered these deals and it's like, no, I'm not showing up this year. Like, wait, no, we signed you.
I'm going to sit out the parliament this year. I'm sitting it out.
Yeah.
What, you can? Really?
It really is weird.
Very strange. And to me, I don't know what the Tories are all about. The Labour Party seems to be like the Liberals here.
Yes, and the Tories are
very close to socialists. Right. Mm-hmm. Then there's a conservative party that I don't think they're like American conservatives.
No, none of them are.
And then there's a Brexit party now. And the Brexit party has vastly increased their numbers over the last couple of years. And they just did a poll where if the election would have been held when they did the poll, apparently the Brexit party was maybe in the lead, I think.
Wow.
It had more support than the Labour and Tories combined.
And that may be who takes over in July.
Maybe.
Can you imagine the frustration, though, that you go through this whole thing where they put this up to a big vote. You've got a situation where your entire nation steps up and does something that was thought to be unthinkable by the entire world. Yeah, we are pulling out of the European Union. We didn't like this experiment. We're out.
And I thought it was a great decision.
Oh, I do too. I'm fully behind the Daniel Hannan view.
But the elites, a lot of the elites didn't think it was. They were not fully behind. Right. That's what Theresa May tried to do is, pull out, well, we're going to leave, but we're not really going to leave.
Well, and May gets, just destroyed by everybody here because she has no allies left really anymore. But I mean, mm-hmm. the bottom line is she had to get something passed. So she can't just say, well, pure Brexit, Daniel Hannan, you design it, because then none of the other people are going to vote for it. So mm-hmm. like she has to actually come up with something that everyone votes on, which is, near impossible. So the closer we get to this sort of deadline, they have this hard pullout thing, which I think is, probably where this winds up, honestly, at this point. And I don't think it's going to be nearly as disastrous as everyone else is saying. But I mean, think about this. When we had Obamacare going on in this country, and Obamacare they're going back and forth about it, trying to figure out what, whether this thing is going to pass. Barack Obama's got 60 senators. He can pass anything he wants, mm-hmm. With just filibuster proof majority here. He can pass anything he wants. So the Senate passes this bill. And as they're negotiating it, a special election happens in, of all places, Massachusetts. In the middle of this. And Scott Brown is a Republican, somehow wins in Massachusetts almost entirely to stop Obamacare. And then the House just abandons the whole negotiation and takes a quirk of the rules and passes the thing that was already passed that they never planned on actually making into Obamacare. They just passed the old thing. Mm-hmm. Because they couldn't vote on it again because Scott Brown would have made it so they could not have passed it. And remember how we felt?
Oh,
how half the country felt? It was the whole Nancy Pelosi, we're going to pole vault over this. We're going to get it done. You'll see what's in it afterwards. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
That whole thing. That pissed off the entire country. It started, the Tea Party was largely, right in tune with that. We're talking one of the largest wave elections in the last century. I mean, it was a massive change in our country because of that. That's nothing compared to what's happened with Brexit. The people actually all came out and voted for it. And they're like, yeah, we're not going to do it. So thanks for your input, but no.
Yeah.
And now it's been, dragging on for so long.
And it's not like that was a non-binding referendum.
Right? It was a big deal.
It was a big deal. Yeah. And it was you want to get out of Brexit, we'll get out of Brexit. And then, nope, we don't want to. The elites, we don't want
to.
No,
we don't want
to. And the government called for it, thinking it would be defeated. And we could finally be done with this whole leaving the EU thing. because we'll just destroy it. Right. Stay will win and leave will lose. And then, you know, or remain will win and leave will lose. And it's one of those things where now they're like, well, yeah, we didn't really like what you guys said, though. Well, I know we asked your opinion. It's like when you go
to... We didn't really want it.
Right. It's like when you go to your wife and she says, oh, what do you want? What do you want? Where do you want to go to dinner? And she says, oh, I don't care. And then you're like, all right, Taco Bell? No, not Taco Bell. Well, why didn't you say something then? We're now in the drive-thru line. That's basically what they do.
Yeah.
And that is that's a weird way to run a country.
So confusing. Yeah. It might just be time to send American troops and force the issue. Make them adopt our system. You know, it's just time.
It is weird that...
It's just time.
There's not more of a rush to adopt the American system.
I know.
You know, like a lot of people will go towards democracy, towards capitalism, but because I think America's the big bad boy on the block and they're vilified over it, we're vilified over everything, there's very few countries who are just like, you know what? We were kind of watching this whole America thing develop the last couple hundred years, and it's pretty nice.
Yeah. Let's do that.
It's got some issues, but like I think we should get in that boat.
We have Supreme Court justices saying, you know, an African nation is better than ours.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're not going to, nobody wants to be us.
And I guess because, my guess is because it does not allow for enough government control. If you're starting a new country and you've got the power to design it, well, you're going to put yourself into a position of power. That's why the founders were so freaking great.
It's so because, extraordinary.
Yeah. They were just like, you know what? We have the opportunity to do whatever we want. We could all be kings. We could all rule this place forever. Instead, let's give the power to the people. It's something that almost no one to this day really tries to do.
To the extent where when Washington was asked to be a king, he said, don't ever bring that up again.
Yeah.
Ever. Mm-hmm. That's what we left. And that's what we're trying to avoid. And I don't want to hear that kind of talk because it might spread.
Yeah.
So that takes a pretty amazing person.
It does.
To shut that down.
And in the new, you know, these countries, as they design their systems, they don't necessarily get, you know, they make themselves kings anymore. They just, well, we're going to take control of healthcare, banking, and energy.
Because we know better.
Because we know better. So that's like, you know, 75% of the economy will just run. And then we'll put heavy regulations on everything else. And we'll tell you exactly what you can and can't do. But you guys get to vote for the next person to tell you what you can and cannot do. That's the democracy of today.
It's bizarre.
It is, and again, you do have that moment, as much as we complain about it, remembering when you watch, you know, the whole situation going on in Britain, which is one of the best countries. Like they're like a good example of how things are run. You see how things are going there, and you step back and you say, okay, maybe we do have it pretty sweet here. I mean, maybe it's not so bad.
888-727-BECK. We'll be back in 60 seconds. Pat and Stu and Jeffy for Glenn. He'll be back on Tuesday morning, 888-727-BECK. So yesterday, the American Taliban, John Walker Lind, was released early.
Amazing.
After 17 of his 20-year sentence. They just let him go, I guess, because of good behavior. And people are, including us, we're a little perplexed by that. But the New York Times apparently has a little different spin on it.
Yeah, which you would expect, of course. Mm-hmm. The Times has an op-ed talking about the release of John Walker Lind, and they're basically making they're to his defense attorneys here. They say, hard to imagine now after everything that's happened in the brutal decades since, but there was a time when we were fairly cozy with the Taliban. Now, of course, we know this. You know, famously, there's pictures of, you know, Donald Rumsfeld, and these were trotted out constantly during the administration. For much of the 1990s, when an earnest, bookish California teenager named John Walker Lind first felt himself drawn to the study of Islam.
That's a friendly telling.
The United States lent its support to plans by an American-led group of businesses to develop an oil pipeline that would run through Afghanistan. This would require negotiations with the Taliban, the world's most oppressive Muslim regime. Government officials who had misgivings about human rights abuses in Afghanistan largely kept their reservations to themselves. Not long before, in the Reagan era, the term Mujahideen had a heroic ring to it. These were fierce and noble Afghan warriors, our president assured us, fighting with limited resources to liberate their country from Soviet oppression. Now, of course, you get the tone of this, which is Lind is just a teenager, no big deal. And it was really these Republicans that we were the reason why we were friendly with these oppressive regimes. The official stance, of course, changed after September 11th. And this is one thing I didn't know or didn't remember, at least, about this case. All these events of September 11th were all but unimaginable in mid-2000 when Lind, age 19, decided to travel to the Middle East to study the Quran. So they are making the case, and not explicitly saying, but insinuating at least, that Lind joined the Taliban before 9/11 by a good year or so. So, and at this point, while certainly Osama bin Laden was known in circles of terrorism, he, it wasn't like the main headline of the United States that the Taliban were, was a bad group of people. And someone who's a teenager could easily think that it's not necessarily the worst thing in the world. Now, of course, you have September 11th happens, and we should talk about maybe, I don't know if Jason's in today. I think he is, because he was doing your show, right?
Yes.
Pat Gray Unleashed. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jason Buttrell, who was actually there when he was there when John Walker Lind was at, well, they captured him. He was,
oh, wow.
He was there, like when he was waterboarded, he was there. Like he's a, former military guy and was.
Was he the one waterboarding him?
I asked him that.
That would be cool.
And I said, I was like, if it's true, he won't tell me. But he did say no. But he said he was, like, I don't know if he was in the room, but he was, like, right there. He saw the guy. We got to talk to him about this.
Wouldn't you like to work with the guy who waterboarded?
Oh, totally.
John Walker Lind? I think that'd be interesting.
I'd like to work with someone who waterboarded Jeffy.
Yes.
I would really respect.
That would not be fun.
Now, we all work with people who waterboarded Stuber Gear.
Thank you.
Well, insureboarded.
Insureboarded. Yes, that's right. It wasn't water.
I was waterboarded with a chocolatey shake, which was far too chocolatey for that treatment. That's one to go back on YouTube and find today.
Yeah.
The consequences of the decision, of course, John Walker Lind, are a matter of public record. 2 months after the Twin Towers had fallen, 6 weeks after the United States dropped its first bomb on Afghanistan, a few hundred Taliban soldiers held as prisoners of war in fortress, staged an uprising. Over the next 8 days, all but 86 of those prisoners would die, as well as a great number of their jailers and a man named John Spann, Michael Spann, Johnny Michael Spann was his actual name, who was serving a CIA advisor. He's the first person who died in that war. And of course, they found that one of the people was an American, John Walker Lind. Now, this is their take on the whole prison riot thing, which is one of the big issues with Lind. How is this guy getting out of prison? He was responsible for the death of a CIA agent, the first death in the Afghanistan war. Mm-hmm. They say there was no evidence that this young American had taken an active part in the violence. In fact, it was later determined that he had been hiding in the basement for the bulk of the conflict, which I don't know. Kind
really?
Of
I've never heard that.
Makes me laugh a little bit.
Yeah, I've never heard that.
The Taliban had sheltered Osama bin Laden, after all, and therefore every abettor of his regime, no matter how inconsequential, was a terrorist as well. They go on and say that basically Lind was a teenager, didn't even know the Taliban was bad when he joined, had no role in this at all, gets 20 years unfairly, is their case. Like, shouldn't even have had that. So he gets 20 years, which was a plea agreement, and then he's released, and people are going to give him a hard time on it, and he should be out of prison. That is the case of the New York Times. Now, to me, it's interesting because, and I think this is a positive for our country and our system. And it's the type of thing that as much as I don't like when it goes wrong like this, it's something I'm proud of when it comes to the United States, which is the guy served his term. He served his time. He got 20 years. Now, he did get 17 years because of good behavior, but that was part of his sentencing from the beginning. If he had good behavior, he would be out. They are saying it doesn't matter if he's reformed or not. There's nothing he can do. Trump yesterday came out and said, look, I went, I asked, is there anything I can do about this? And they said, no, there's nothing I can do about this.
And you do kind of like the fact that the president doesn't necessarily have that kind of power.
Yeah, and shouldn't
in
our system.
You could do that to any of your enemies. As president.
Right. You could say, oh, well, I think he's a real risk, and then keep him in prison forever.
Yep. Yeah.
That would not be a good development. So the fact that we're letting him out, while I think in this case is really bad, because it does seem like he's not reformed. Yeah. I mean, even the media is not trying to make the case that he's reformed.
Yeah.
I mean, his dad
I think his
is.
Dad, yeah. His
it's
dad
about
is,
it.
But if you look at his statements in the past few years, they're pretty jihad friendly.
Yeah.
they're like, yeah, I'm going to get back to being radical as soon as I get out of this dump.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And what do you think? I wonder what his first thing was. I feel like, where does he go first? It's like Wendy's or something. Like, there's something he wants to do really badly. I don't know if it's Wendy's for John Walker Lind. Might be for us. But like, what's the first thing he does? And then, does this guy get a job? Like, what's he doing for the rest of his life?
Who's
going to hire John Walker Lind? Probably the New York Times, actually. He'll probably be an op-ed contributor.
Yes. Yeah.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck Program.
Hi, it's Glenn. If you're a subscriber to the podcast, can you do us a favor and rate us on iTunes? If you're not a subscriber, become one today and listen on your own time. You can subscribe on iTunes. Thanks.
Featuring today, Pat Stu and Jeffy. Glenn's back on Tuesday after Memorial Day. 888-727-BECK. Yesterday was a big day. Nancy Pelosi bashing President Trump. President Trump responding, of course, because that's what he does.
Well, he has to.
He has to.
It's a must.
And then, of course, there's this big controversy over the posting of Nancy Pelosi videos where somebody, I don't know who, but Rudy Giuliani tweeted it out and said, what's wrong with Nancy Pelosi? They slowed down the video so it sounds like she's drunk when she's talking.
It is a fun trick to do on anybody.
It is.
Anytime you slow down just a little bit. The audio, it just is hilarious.
Here's the first one: is her slowed down, and then it quickly goes into the actual sound.
We want to give this president the opportunity to do something historic for our country.
Okay, so it sounds like she had a nip or two. Just a little nip this morning, and then here's the actual video.
We want to give this president the opportunity to do something historic for our country.
Okay. So clearly somebody's trying to make her look bad. I don't know who it was, but because somebody in the Trump administration or the Trump team tweeted it out, now they're blaming President Trump for it.
Right.
I don't think he's sitting at an edit bay right now, slowing up her audio and video clips. I think he probably has a little too much on his plate to be doing that.
And he would tell you, I don't need to do that.
Right.
I don't need to do that.
I mean, Giuliani that shared it?
Giuliani shared
initially,
it, initially. Right.
And they get, you know, and he thought that it was real and he thought did. That there was something wrong with
and
her,
when
which
he realized
you would
it
think.
Wasn't, he took it down.
Yeah, and he took it down.
Because we've played many Nancy Pelosi clips that weren't edited or altered in any way, and she does this. She slurs and she sounds like, you know, something's wrong with her.
Yes.
We've talked about that in the past. So it's kind of logical to think that was a real audio or video. Turns out it wasn't this time.
Yeah. So I don't think again, these things turn into international incidents all the time.
Sure. Yes, they do.
And
because of the media.
Right. Not because they're real, because they see it as an opportunity to bash the president and the administration and say how evil Republicans are. When, of course, you're telling me, you go online, you just tell me Democrats aren't sharing fake stuff all the time. Of course they are. Of course they are. You do open yourself up to it. Especially if you're Rudy Giuliani and an attorney, you probably should be a little careful online with what you're doing. I mean, you're representing the president of the United States in personal matters. You probably don't want to be sharing fake videos.
No, I mean, you probably want to, before you hit send, you probably want to look at it one more time.
Yeah.
That's all.
Take a break. You know, but I mean, this is the world we live in now. Mm-hmm. This would have been interesting commentary in 2008. All right, like it's 2019. Mm-hmm. You know, celebrities are doing this all the time. Politicians are doing it all the time. We have just entered that world where people aren't careful anymore. I remember when Glenn was doing the TV show and we started out. I can't remember if it was CNN days or Fox days, and he was in the middle of writing something on the chalkboard. And like the chalkboard is like a difficult thing. As it doesn't seem like it would be difficult to do,
right.
But Glenn's in the middle of doing a TV show. He has to look at all the elements that are coming up, like what video is next and what order are these things going on. He's doing a monologue and he's writing on the board. And I can't remember what word it was, but he misspelled a word on the board. And there was a reason. I can't remember what it was at this point, but it was something like it was either misspelled in the script or like he did like a Ron Burgundy and just wrote it the way he saw it. I can't remember what the situation was. It was not a word he didn't know how to spell, but he just screwed it up on the air. And that haunted him for like years. Like Dan Quayle misspelling potato back in the day. It was like a big deal. Everyone was like, "Oh, can you believe this guy can't spell words?"
That's why he's still a little sensitive.
Oh, he's very hesitant to spell
about writing things.
Every time he does it with chalkboard, he makes sure someone checks it to make sure. You know, and when
you can't blame him.
Yeah, I know, and
I mean,
that's
I'm
something
not a Glenn
that should
Beck
happen.
Apologist like you, Stu, but you know, you can't blame him.
Right, and so, but now. I mean, it doesn't feel like people make mistakes that are much worse than anything that from the old days, and no one cares.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because it's constant. You're constantly berated. Like, there was a time where you thought maybe celebrities had some level of intelligence. Then you see them tweet. And it's like, okay, well, we know they're idiots. Like, we thought, we were wondering if they're, they're idiots. That is acting. When they act like, when they're playing the role of a doctor, they're not really a doctor. You kind of get to the sense of that pretty quickly when you see them spell.
You do. Yes, you do. 888-727-BECK. More coming up in 60 seconds. More vitriol, of course, from the left, directed at President Trump. Nancy Pelosi wants an intervention for him, which, I mean, I guess that's okay to say about the president when you're the Speaker of the House now. If that had happened during the Obama years, as with every single story,
yes,
all hell would have broken loose by now. The Speaker of the House would have been vilified if they would have said an intervention is necessary with Obama and make him sound like, you know, he's crazy or he's insane or just completely out of control. You'd be a racist. They used to throw that label out at us when we criticized him for anything. And our criticism was never anything approaching what the Democrats do to Trump now. Well, unbelievable, the hatred.
That's really the main use, I think, of identity politics at this point. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people talk about it in terms of like, well, they will try to give money to minority groups so they get minority groups votes, or they'll try to give benefits to a certain minority group, or they'll talk nicely about them to try to get their votes. And that's, of course, part of it. But the other side of it is, I think, more the real use of today, which is if you have someone who's in a protected group, there, you always have the defense of saying no matter what the accusation is, it's based on race, mm-hmm. or it's based always. On, right? Like
whatever the group is.
If Pete Buttigieg, right, becomes president of the United States and he has a crappy tax policy, when you say he has a crappy tax policy, they'll say you don't like gays. So they don't actually have to defend the policy. They'll just say you are a hater of gays, or you're a hater of women, or you're a hater of African Americans, whatever the group is. And so that becomes the catch-all for every single defense of every single thing that someone does that is in this protected class. It's mm-hmm. like the main reason why you don't want Joe Biden to be the nominee, because he's basically the only one in the field that has a chance to win that isn't in some protected group, right? I mean, you pretty much can go through the entire list. I mean, you have obviously, Bernie Sanders, you have Kamala Harris, Klobuchar, she's a woman, Cory Booker, and then Elizabeth Warren, of course, is Native American. So she's in a protected group as well. 1/1024th protected.
Uh-huh.
Right.
So I
uh-huh.
think that there is it works on both sides. This is why the left loves to embrace it. They don't have to make arguments about their points. They just say you're a racist, and it's a catch-all for every single argument.
And Buttigieg had something interesting to say about the president, which I don't know that this is true, but he said it as if it's proven fact.
Do you think he should have served in Vietnam?
Well, I have a pretty dim view of his decision to use his privileged status to fake a disability in order to avoid serving in Vietnam.
Hmm. You believe he faked a disability?
Do you believe he has a disability? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. At least not that one. He
That's making fun of people, which is okay.
Uh-huh. He jumps
this
in.
This is actually really important because I don't mean to trivialize disability, but I think that's exactly what he did.
Wow.
But I mean, there's no...
Has anybody stated a fact that he didn't have bone spurs when he had claimed to have bone spurs back in, what was it, the late 60s or early 70s when it was time for Vietnam service? I think that's why he wasn't... drafted, but I am not aware that he faked that.
I would say that's generally thought to have been the case, but I don't know that there's evidence of it, right? Like there was something else. I can't remember there's another thing right around there where he passed some physical or something like that around the time where then he went for another one and got bone spurs after. Like, it was something like that. Like, I can't remember what. Do you remember what it was, Jeffy?
No, I was trying, as you mentioned it there again, in that story, because that was with his father.
Right.
Was still around making some choices for son Donald at that time, too.
Yeah, they were. God, but I mean, again, first of all, it's ancient history.
Yeah.
Right. Second of all, there was a lot of that that went on in that era. Mm-hmm. You know, the draft to me is a terrible, terrible thing and should not be. It's ridiculous.
Shouldn't ever come back.
And I hope it doesn't. Mm-hmm. You know, there were plenty of people on the left. And honestly, I mean, at that point, Donald Trump is probably a Democrat, right? I mean, he's probably at that point in his life, not even a Republican. But yeah, a lot of people did that, and especially a lot of people with lives that were privileged did that. There was, you know, that did occur. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a good thing, but a bigger story there is that we should not be taking people unwilling to join the military and throw them in the middle of our battles. That's not a good idea. That's not something. I mean, that you want to talk about last resort area. Mm-hmm. That's where the draft should live. I mean, you know, maybe if you're in, you know, maybe if the Nazis are currently bombing Kansas. Maybe that's something you may need. And I will say, at that point, you're not going to need to draft anyone. There's going to be plenty of people willing to fight there. But yeah, I mean, that is part of the situation with war, right? Like, that's part of the, when you're going to send the military of war, this is why you actually make sure you make a good case of it. And you make sure that you've convinced the American people that it's the right thing to do. Because if you don't, then you have situations like this where, you know, people aren't volunteering enough and you feel like you need to institute draft. The draft should not be something that happens, though. I mean, I would think that that's one of those things. If you're in the military, do you really want to be fighting next to someone who is like, I'd rather not be here. I don't believe in this cause. That does not seem like the type of person you'd want next to you. Now, a lot of people who were drafted fought valiantly, and many went and died, you know, during the draft, and their service mm-hmm. should be honored. I mean, they really should. But I mean, I don't think that's a good generalized policy for a military. You want people to be really into it. You know, you want people who are going,
who have chosen to do it. Mm-hmm. Exactly. 888-727-BECK. Back in about 60 seconds. Pat, Stu, and Jeffy for Glenn. 888-727-BECK. Things are kind of heating up on the Democrat side. Apparently in Iowa, there's a dead heat now between Biden and Bernie Sanders.
Wow.
As far as the town halls that all these cable channels are doing, here's how badly Beto O'Rourke is doing right now. First of all, he's doing so badly, I think we mentioned this briefly yesterday, that no other candidates are doing any opposition research on him anymore. Just all stopped it. It went from dozens to zero. There are no research projects right now on Beto O'Rourke.
And like, as inexplicable as the rise of Beto O'Rourke is, to me, mm-hmm. the same can be said about the fall.
About the collapse,
There's no real reason. He didn't do anything horrifically wrong. He didn't have a major scandal. He didn't have a giant gaffe. People were just like, yeah, we really like you. And they're toying with him to get him into the race. And as soon as he got in the race, like, yeah, we actually hate your guts.
You know what I think it was? I think it was that little, I'm getting in my car by myself, and I'm driving around the country, stopping in at weird places. And I'm going to find myself.
Yeah.
I'm going to find myself.
But that was before he got in.
Yes, it was.
And he got in and immediately was at, what, you know, 12 and 15%.
Yeah.
I mean, he was second or third place when he got into the race. And just every day, another poll comes out where he's 1 point lower. And there's only so many days that you can pull that one off. I mean, eventually you get to zero.
And I'm not sure it's about his policies because he doesn't have any.
Right.
Well, he has one. He wants to bring about gun control. Here's what he said the other day about eliminating guns.
That weapons of war designed for use on the battlefield are no longer sold into our communities, so they don't end up in our schools or our synagogues, in our churches. We can save even more lives. Two more steps that I want to take. Red flag laws. And not just do it town by town or state by state, but do it nationally so that anyone who exhibits a tendency to harm themselves or to harm somebody else can be stopped before they do that. And then the last part, let's make sure that we invest in the counseling and the mental health and the therapy necessary for people to get the care that they need.
Do you support mandatory federal licensing for guns, gun owners rather, in the United States, similar to what you hear from Cory Booker?
I think that's something that we need to look at. And I'm grateful to Senator Booker for taking a bold approach to a very urgent problem that we have right now. Mm-hmm. But I would start with those four steps that I just outlined. Mm-hmm. There's consensus there. There's agreement. We're going to be able to make progress. But yes, I think this is something that should be debated. We should have a full hearing on that. And if it makes sense to the American public, then let's move forward.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we'll do some polls.
There you go.
And if If it turns out people like, if they're popular, then I'll be for them. If they're not popular, I'll be against them.
Yeah, that is, I guess, if you were going to say the one big problem right now, it's that. He keeps saying things like that.
He does.
You know, like, if the American people like it, we'll move forward, is not what the Democrats want to hear right now.
Not at all.
They want to hear, like, I want socialism whether people want it or not. Like, that's what they want to hear.
You're going to get it. You're going to get it with me.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. They want someone who's going to, you know, the way they see Trump. Right. They see Trump doing whatever he wants to do, which is, of course, not true. But that's what that's their vision of him. And they want that action on their side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Beto, one of the big things you could say about him is he does not have an extensive amount of policy plans.
No, he doesn't.
And that's one of the reasons why he's fallen. I mean, if there's one candidate who I would say is in the middle of Biden, obviously, he's in a category of his own right now. I mean, it's his to lose. But if there's another one of these lower candidates that's having a bit of a moment, I would say it's probably Elizabeth Warren right now. And the reason is because, I mean, she's got a policy for everything, and people like talking about that they care about that. Now, in reality, of course, they don't. None of these people have actually read any of the policies. But her brand of being the person who comes up with a new policy for every issue is very attractive to a Democrat who thinks the federal government should do everything for you. I mean, you know, Beto talks about that. I don't want to go state to state. I don't go town by town for these rules. I want it to be federal. Well, of course you do. That's the entire definition of your philosophy. It's the exact opposition of what the country was built on, federalism, which is where we did go state to state and see what works. And then other states would pick that stuff up. You want to do everything federally. And you know what? When it comes to the Second Amendment, you have no wiggle room. I mean, you have no wiggle room
when
you want to ban
semi-automatic weapons, which includes handguns.
Now, he did say, he didn't actually say that, did he, in that clip? He wants to ban semi-automatic weapons. He said we got to get these weapons of war off the street, which is an even dumber thing to say because everything is a weapon of war. I mean, go watch every time, watch the Arab Spring. They're freaking throwing rocks and glass bottles. Those are weapons of war. When you need a weapon in war, you use anything as a weapon of war. It's a meaningless description. People are like, oh, well, it means weapons that were designed for war. Every weapon can be used in war. A handgun.
That's the point.
Every single war that has ever been fought since the invention of a handgun has utilized handguns. Every single one of them. Of course they have. If you're just sitting there like, you know what? My big scary AR doesn't have any bullets left, but I'm not going to fire this because it's not technically a weapon of war. Like, that's not something that occurs with a soldier.
No, it is not.
Right? So it is a meaningless thing. I mean, semi-automatic weapons bans, again, that's basically every gun people use. Like, it sounds like a scary word to a lot of people. And I know in this audience, most people are going to be familiar with the difference between an automatic weapon and a semi-automatic weapon and, you know, a modern sporting rifle and all these things. I could say that growing up in Connecticut, largely, I don't think I would have, you know, if I wasn't in this business, I wouldn't have any interest or knowledge about what a semi-automatic weapon was. I would just think bad, scary. That's what people in Connecticut think, which is why they were able to pass, you know, a massive bill restricting gun rights in Connecticut. You know, I think there's it's certainly not everybody in Connecticut, of course, but I know, I mean, I didn't come from a gun household. My dad was in the military, but I didn't come from a household that knew anything. We didn't have guns in the house. It was not part of our culture at all. And so, you know, people just don't know what these terms mean. So you throw out banning semi-automatic weapons, people think, good, we're going to get rid of those school shooting guns.
Yeah.
Well, no, this is basically every gun operationally that people have for self-defense, right? I mean, you have shotguns, you know, which would fall out of that definition in most cases.
Revolvers?
Your revolver? I mean, do people really use... I guess they do. I mean, some. But, I mean, most people are just going to have a semiotic
I haven't seen a revolver other than in a gun store.
Right, people like using them at the range. They like using them to shoot. But they're not... Yeah. I mean, they're not the prototypical American self-defense firearm.
No.
That's going to be a semi-automatic handgun or, you know, maybe a shotgun. But still... It's like they're talking about banning. They're going way beyond anything Australia did or anything the British did. This is you know, it's gun control at a level we haven't seen in a long time.
You're listening to the Best of the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome to it. It is Pat, Stu, and Jeffy for Glenn. 888-727-1110. BECK if you'd like to get involved in the program. We'd love to hear from you. We got an amazing story about a university that's been kicked out of their sports conference.
It's amazing.
It sure is.
The reason, well, yeah, it might astound you, and then again, maybe not. As a matter of fact, we might as well just jump into it. The University of St. Thomas, they're a Division III school. They're being kicked out of the Minnesota Intercollegiate Athletic Conference because their teams are too dominant. We're sorry, you're too good
too
for
good.
Us. And we're sick of it, so we can't beat you. We want you out. They're like, well, wait, we'd like to stay in the conference. Nope. If you stay in the conference is going to dissolve. Wait,
wow.
What?
I mean, how dominant have they been? Do we know? Because I don't follow the Minnesota Intercollegiate Athletic Conference.
Really? I don't follow it as closely as I should.
Back in the day, I used to watch every game, but now it's more like no games.
Really?
Yeah, it's a slight change in approach.
Yeah, I'd say that seems like a more than a slight change.
Really?
Yeah, it does. ESPN said St. Thomas has won 6 MIAC football titles since 2010. Okay, so they won 6 out of 8 or maybe even 9 now.
Right.
And they reached the title game in 2012 and 2015. But they also said the school's overall athletic program has been on a winning streak. St. Thomas finished 10th nationally in the Learfield Directors Cup. That's where they take all the sports and add up how you did in each sport, and then the school that did the best in all of those sports wins the most points.
You're acting as if we don't know what the Learfield Director's Cup is.
I didn't mean to insult your intelligence.
Oh, the audience. There's millions of people going, we know, Pat. We know what the Learfield Director's Cup is.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Why don't you explain the Heisman Trophy to us now? according to St. Thomas president Julie Sullivan, she said the league's decision is extremely disappointing, but added the school is committed to finding a new athletic conference. Although our athletic conference will change, one thing will not, our commitment to continued academic and athletic excellence.
I mean, according to this, they were one of the founding members of this conference.
That's crazy.
A founding member since 1920, and we're going to kick them out.
1920? They've been in this conference for that long, and they're kicking them out because they're too good?
They won 47% of all the MIAC championships, both team and individual sports.
Not even half?
From 2003 to 2018, so not even half.
That's still a successful lot, program.
It's a successful program, but it's not.
But it'd be like the Big Ten kicking Ohio State out of the Big Ten.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, we can't compete with you. We
SEC
don't want you here
kicking
anymore.
Out Alabama. I'm okay
right.
with that. You know what?
You're okay with that?
Yeah, let's
of course, I would support Alabama getting kicked out of really all...
out of college football. So maybe we should reevaluate our stand
yeah.
here.
Because it is annoying when that team
they have
constantly
every right to
wins.
Get rid of this school. Every right.
Thank you.
I mean, it is annoying when a team constantly wins, right? I mean, the Golden State is again in the finals this year, and people are, you know...
Tired of it.
Are tired of it. They don't want to say...
New England Patriots.
Yes.
Tired of it.
I couldn't be more sick of the New England Patriots.
Yeah.
Thankfully, the Philadelphia Eagles were there to make sure they didn't win multiple Super Bowls in a row. As we all know, everyone thanks God for the Eagles, but...
do they?
They do.
Do they?
But it is one of those things. It is annoying. And I'm sure as a college where you're losing all the time to the same colleges, I could see it being irritating, but that really should just motivate you to be a better program.
Thank you. Yes.
Or you drop out, right? Like if you're really that frustrated with it, you drop out and join a crappier conference.
Go to a weaker
conference. It goes back. Now, according to the story, it goes back to one particular game. Now, we talk all the time about teams shouldn't hold back. You know, how angry we are with coaches who reach 50 points and they're winning 50 to nothing and then pull back.
Oh, yeah, I'm all for running up the
score. In 2017, St. Thomas played St. Olaf College. And when you bring those two teams together,
you can throw the record books right out the window.
Mm-hmm. And you have to because St. Thomas beat them 97 to nothing.
And this is football?
Yes.
I mean, that's a defeat.
Yeah.
You know, you would say we need to go back to the drawing board.
And that apparently that was the catalyst.
Well, that should have been the catalyst for St. Olaf to maybe
leave.
Leave. Or get their football team to be a little bit better. Maybe you recruit better. Maybe you work them harder. Maybe, you know, you try harder then, right?
Well, we'd like to try harder, only with St. Thomas out.
Because really the whole point of sports, it's, you know, it's supposed to be something where it's pure competition, pure merit, mm-hmm. right? Now, of course, we all know that that's not always the case anymore. But I mean, that is the idea of it. It's one of the, it's the last bastion of any merit-based activity in the world.
Right. And we're even losing this.
And yeah, we're losing that. That's why I think, you know, a lot of times conservatives complain about the same sort of thing, like the trophy, the free trophy culture, and everybody gets an award and all of that. And it's not because we care all that much about, you know, who gets trophies. It's a, it's about caring about the authenticity of competition. You have to have competition that's merit-based and pure, or there's no reason to do it. And you know, a lot of these sports leagues, when it comes down to the way the salary cap operates and people switching teams to go play with their friends and all of this craziness that goes on in these leagues these days, it winds up, you know, it's just putting like a little bit of pollution into that world, and you don't want it there.
Yeah. We're enabling whiners.
Yeah.
And losers, really, because if you keep losing in this conference to this school, as you said, that should be motivation for you to work all that much harder in order to get better so that you can come back and beat these guys the next year.
Or close the doors of your program. If you're going to lose 97-0 to everybody in your conference, maybe it's time to just close the doors and not do anything anymore.
It's like back in 19, I think it was 1920 or 22, somewhere in there, when Georgia Tech beat Cumberland College 222-0.
Yeah.
And Cumberland College decided, okay, you know what? We're not going to play football anymore.
Yeah,
and that's a good decision. Probably a good decision on their part.
It was a great decision.
Yeah, if you don't want to be humiliated, you either strive to do better or you quit. And they
good old-fashioned quit. Road. Yeah, you know what? At 222-0, it's hard to blame them on that one.
Yeah.
You know, if you lose 17-7, you should probably try harder. You lose 222-0.
You're probably not a very good program.
And I will say, Pat, I'm a little disappointed that you didn't remember it was 1916.
It was 16? Okay. All right.
Was it 222-0 exactly?
Yes.
And that was, I think this was a game where, I think it was this game where they, the team on offense, one of the reasons why the score was so high, the team that was losing was angry about it, so they were just not trying. They stopped trying at one point. I think it's this game. It could be, there's another game that was the same, similar type of blowout, and they just stopped trying. Because they were just like trying to prove a point, like, go ahead, score another freaking touchdown. And then they would just take the ball and not even try.
See, that might be the wrong attitude as well.
That might
be,
too.
That might be. They should just get out of the league at that point.
Well, this attitude has become so prevalent that it's even entered the NFL, where you got people making $5, $10, $15 million a year on defense to stop an offense, and then they still expect the offense not to try hard.
Why didn't you take a knee when it was 27-0?
Yeah.
Hey, that wasn't nice that you threw a pass. They kicked a field goal with a minute left in a 24-10 game. Come on.
You're like, wait a minute. That's like, they should be doing that.
I'm sorry. Isn't your team payroll like $400 million? Stop them.
Yeah.
Stop them. It's crazy.
I hate it.
It's crazy.
It's such a weird, I mean, and it gets folded into sportsmanship. And I think it's the exact opposite of sportsmanship. If you are taking, and I understand this when it comes to young kids, a lot of times this is where this stuff begins, but it's like, what is more insulting to a professional athlete? Either kicking an extra field goal or literally giving up and saying, I'm so much better than you. If I try, it will be embarrassing for you.
That seems to be worse.
Much worse.
Yes.
888-727-BECK. More in 60 seconds. Pat Stu and Jeffy for Glenn on the Glenn Beck Program, 888-727-BECK. Harvey Weinstein has apparently reached a settlement with some of the women he apparently abused. Right? Is that
allegedly
in lieu of trial?
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Apparently.
I'm sorry. Allegedly.
Allegedly abused these 80 women.
It is a fact, though, that nothing's been proven against him.
It's true.
So far as I know.
And he denies it all.
He denies any wrongdoing.
Those cases will still go to trial.
Two criminal cases.
The criminal cases are still going.
Yeah. One of them was an alleged rape. Yes. That one is problematic for him because there is audio of him kind of saying he did it. So that's a bit of a problem.
Oh, wow.
Now, of course, you'll say, well, what I meant was, and come up with some other excuse or explanation. It did pretty much seem like he was going along with the fact that he did grab her several times at the very least. But so the Weinstein thing is, this is really the company, right? The company is settling with these women.
Yes.
There's 80 people who had alleged that he had done things to them. And this is basically becomes a pool of money that they can get claims from. Mm-hmm. And it was paid from corporate insurance. So none of this money comes from Harvey Weinstein. And of course he's obviously paid already with the entire, you know, the entire company. I mean, you know, what was it? 4 days after all this happened, he got fired, and within a couple of months, the company was dissolved.
It's gone. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is just kind of a fallout from that, which is a pretty big deal. I mean, it's weird because people look at this and they say, well, he's not getting the punishment he should get for these things. And I can understand that, though it's not really your choice. It's the woman's choice, right? Like, we like to take the woman's, we say, like, this is all about Me Too and empowering women, but don't let them choose to take a bunch of money. Don't let them choose what they want to do.
Right.
If they want to take a bunch of money, they should be able to take a bunch of money. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, I mean, you know, a crime is a crime, and there's a criminal process for that. But this is not that situation.
No, it isn't. But we've also seen in this Me Too movement that they want the bunch of money, and then
they will still be able to tell on them later. And that is one thing that has not been discussed as much when it comes to the whole Me Too movement, which is, look, humans are awful, okay? They're really awful creatures.
You don't have to look at me when you say that.
Look at you, didn't I? That was almost instinctive. They're really awful people, and they do awful things to each other. And this goes both ways. I mean, you know, we were just talking about football. Tyreek Hill, who's the star wide receiver for the Kansas City Chiefs, sort of. At this moment, he still is. He's been indefinitely suspended from the team because of these clips of audio where he seems to be being abusive to his wife and talking about potentially being abusive to his girlfriend, and also their child. And, you know, it looks really bad. And then they release a competing tape where she's basically admitting he did nothing wrong. So, right. I mean,
yeah,
but like, we don't know where this one turns out. I don't know the ins and outs of it well enough. But the bottom line is women are also humans, and women are also awful at times. And so are guys. Like, everybody does, you know, terrible things. There's examples of it all over the place. And at times, the legal system of the United States and even the victims benefit from a system that they can go and say, look, I don't want to go through the court system. I don't want to be dredged through the mud. I don't want to go in front of everybody and tell everyone my deepest, darkest, the worst moment of my life. I don't want to explain it. And they have these settlements for those reasons. And now we're like, well, they shouldn't be able to have those settlements.
Right.
They shouldn't be able to choose that direction. Well, they should be able to choose it. You know, and I think that part of it, if that goes away, you're going to wind up having every woman who has a legitimate claim had be dragged through the courts by really wealthy people, and it's going to be a terrible outcome at the end. So, I mean, that's a whole other part of this, but I think the Weinstein situation is going to play out in ugly fashion over the next year.
This settlement, I mean, this is like they're reporting $44 million is the pile. Mm-hmm. That's what it's being reported. Yep. You know, that's pretty good.
It's a lot of money. It's a lot of money, but it's still only part of what's going to happen to Harvey Weinstein here.
Oh, yeah.
888-727-BECK back in 1 minute. Speaking of Harvey Weinstein, some new movies are released this weekend, including Aladdin. Any interest in Aladdin?
Oh, is it the Will Smith thing?
Yeah.
Oh, good God. That looks
terrible. Yeah, he's the genie, right?
Yeah, he's the genie.
I don't think I've even seen a trailer.
Oh, I have.
Oh, my goodness.
It looks bad?
This is one. I feel like
really?
It's...
Really? Like a disaster?
It looks to me, it's just like the end of the Will Smith career.
Like, wow, it looks
I'm
that
sure that's
bad?
Not true. I mean, like, I don't... Wow. I mean, it's designed for children, but it's like him as a goofy blue genie.
Well,
I mean,
he's trying to be Robin Williams, right? I mean, that's the Robin Williams
character. That's a tough order when you're not Robin Williams. And you're not
that's
a comedian.
I mean, Will Smith could probably pull it. I mean, like, he'll probably do fine. He'll probably make a lot of money and he'll be fine. But, like, it's going to be hard to take him seriously in the next role. Like, I don't know.
It got 60% on Rotten Tomatoes. I think that's the critics. And then, according to Google users, 92% liked it. That's pretty high.
Yeah. It just looks to me to be horrible. But I have no interest in this this genre.
Yeah, that's not a Stew type of movie.
I mean, it's not an adult type of movie, right? It's a movie for kids.
No, yeah.
Yeah, live action.
Yeah.
For me, you know.
No, I have
it's
kids.
Pokemon Detective Pikachu. That's what I'm looking for.
Me too. Oh. Now my son is very into this.
Anticipation. Is he?
Now he's seven.
Into the Pikachu thing?
Yes. Very. Yeah. He did. He went through a big Pokemon phase, mm-hmm. and it saw the preview of this movie at another movie we were at, and is very excited to see it. I am not as high on it.
I am so glad I don't have small children to have to take to this. I am so glad. Then there's something called...
This is, Pat, though, where the dine-in theater becomes a big thing. Because I can go to any movie and it's at a dine-in theater.
As long
as
there's food.
Just shovel food down my mouth
the entire
time. You can
pacify me. Yeah.
You know, and not to mention, I mean, this is not going to be necessarily your forte here, Pat. But, of course, the full bar of being available makes Aladdin pretty good. I got to believe there's a certain amount of drinks in which Will Smith's performance is excellent.
Uh-huh. And I got to tell you, a couple of those movies, you put your feet up in those movies, you're...
Oh yeah, I've fallen asleep before, especially at a movie with the kids. Like, because if you're not, you know, some of them are good.
Watch, I am.
Yeah. My kids like wandered off into Hostel Part 2. He's in another part of the theater. I'm like sound asleep on a chair. It happens.
Did you see the new theater they're opening up in? I think it was Switzerland, and it's basically a bedroom. You lay on a bed. It looks like a bed anyway, and they come in and they change it every single showing apparently. And you, I mean, it literally reclines into a bed
with a bedstand.
I don't know how you stay awake with that.
You just fall asleep.
That kind of comfort is just—it gets too comfortable at some point.
They're doing all sorts of these weird things. Have you heard the new? This is off topic, but I've been seeing commercials for this lately, and I think it's actually a thing, which is the Capital One Cafe.
Yes. Why would you want a bank that's a cafe?
Right.
Yeah, I don't understand
it. Go into a bank and bank.
Right, because they're like, we're reinventing banking.
Right.
And what it means is, I guess you go and you get a coffee while you're opening an account? Like, it seems to be the legitimate pitch. I will say I'm intrigued enough to walk into one of them if I could find one. Because I want to know what they're trying to do.
I think every single time. I think, I want that in my bank?
Right.
I don't know that and they don't I'm looking for that.
They don't seem to ever say they're serving anything. It looks like a cafe, and they say the word cafe. But then they just talk about signing up online for bank accounts. And I'm like, well, I can do that.
We've reimagined a bank into a coffee shop. Why don't I just go to a coffee shop?
Because you're not going to be able to bank there.
I don't know if you can bank at the bank.
Like, this is like.
Because it's now a coffee shop.
And if you're going to combine two things. I don't think bank and cafe are the way I would go. Like, there's a place near where I live. And it's like one of these like strip malls. And I don't know if it's a Robert Kraft establishment, but there's a massage place in the strip mall. And next to it is a donut shop. But on the sign for the complex, it just says massage donuts. And I'm like, donuts and massage is a solid combo.
That's a great combo.
Like, I just want to be, you're getting a massage and people are just feeding you donuts at the same time. That's the sort of combination you want. Yeah. KFC Taco Bell. Right, like they're in the same thing. You go in there, you can order whatever fried chicken thing you want, and you get a bunch of tacos.
Yes.
Like that's a solid combination.
Yes, it is.
Yes,
I feel like bank and cafe is not the direction we need to be going.
What if you could go the other way on the bank cafe, where it starts as a cafe, but we also do banking now?
Yeah, like Starbucks.
Starbucks
just open up a bank.
We're reimagining a coffee shop, and we're going to give you banking.
Thank you.
A banking experience here as well.
Yeah,
it'd be interesting to see if that worked out.
I guess it's not a movie, but have you started watching Chernobyl yet?
No, I have not.
So good. The first episode is really good.
I know there's three episodes released on HBO now. I think I'm two in, and they both are really good. I really enjoyed it. But I see where IMDb ranked it as its top-rated show now.
Oh, wow.
9.5.
Nice.
And it also had, it's like the top of its launch on Sky Atlantic now of like 1.7 million viewers.
Wow. Mm.
You're listening to Glenn Beck.
Hey, it's Glenn, and I want to tell you about something that you should either end your day with or start your morning with, and that is The News and Why It Matters. If you like this show, you're going to love The News and Why It Matters. It's a bunch of us that all get together at the end of the day and just talk about the stories that matter to you and your life. The News and Why It Matters. Look for it now wherever you download your favorite podcast.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.